Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Carter Worth, Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, and Guy Dami. Tonight on Fast, a major sell-off to wrap up the week. The top strategist, Tom Lee, says, don't worry, a 10% rally into year-end is still in the cards. He will be here to explain. Plus, the transport's getting slammed down nearly 2% today. But one trader's making a contrarian call on one of the biggest losers in the group. He will explain. We start with the market sell-off, the Dow dropping 500 points, the S&P and NASDAQ also down 2%. As the selling into year-end continues to pick up steam, as worries about global growth slowdown continue to hit the markets, it's really been a winter wipeout. The S&P 500 back in correction territory, down nearly 12% from the September highs and closing just pennies below that key 2,600 level, its lowest level since April. So is it all downhill from here, and what should you do? Guy Dami.
All downhill from here. No, it's not all downhill from here, but I think there's further room to the downside. Steve Grasso's talked about 25-30 in the S&P. That's 70-ish handles from here. What is that, 2.5%? I don't think that's unreasonable to think you can test it, and maybe you see from there Tom Lee's 10%. It's getting a little late in the year for that, but one never knows. I think, listen, Tim's been on this, Dan. I know Carter's been bearish as well. Europe is absolutely slowing. The data out of China has not been good. There seems to be problems with banks for more than just the Fed reason. So there are a confluence of events taking place that are knocking the market down. I think that continues over the next couple of weeks.
Banks are now in bear market territory, officially down 20% off the highs. And that data out of China was really not encouraging.
It was awful. So, data points in China tend to be volatile. And I've argued that the PMIs, the data has been, more or less in a range with the last couple of years. But actually, that started to tend down. Retail sales last night, lowest print in China since 2003. By the way, this has been effectively a straight line down over the last 7 years. So, again, not happening overnight. But rest of the world, remember when we were asking that question, when we were going to catch up to them or could we exist on our own? We can't exist on our own. And I will repeat, I think the ECB meeting this week, Draghi to me sounded not confident that they can engineer what they need to try to thread the needle. I think the dynamic in France is something that's going to make the politics worse. I think we're a European banking crisis away from taking this market significantly lower. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think of some of the externalities. Most importantly, we have not necessarily heard companies come out and reaffirm guidance. We have not seen the street downgrade. And also, credit to EBITDA right now is essentially at highs we haven't seen in either of the previous two cycles for this market.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned companies because, fourth quarter earnings season is going to be around the corner.
Yeah,
in January, we're getting these conference calls. And do you think, what has changed in terms of the unknowns in the market at this point? Do we still have a China trade war? Yes. Do we know if tariffs are going to be ratcheted higher? We still don't know. So what are these companies going to say?
I would just say, I will get to that in 1 second. I'll just say in the very new term, the good news is this, that sentiment is downright horrible. The price action is downright horrible. We have two identifiable events next week. We have the FOMC meeting, and then we do have a deadline on a government shutdown, which is next Friday, December 21st. So there is a scenario where we could get a relief rally. We had a horrible week in the markets this week. Every rally got sold. We closed at the dead low almost, and we could see maybe a reversal of that. I don't really see us getting a 10% rally from the lows.
Even if you got it, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. The higher we go, I think until we get to what Mel's saying now, and we get into January and we start releasing Q4 results and giving Q1 guidance, the larger issues, the trade issues, there's still going to be a lot of uncertainty.
There's an expression, when you're hoping, it's hopeless. There are four things that have been held out since
Carter
the summer.
Always has a great line for everything.
But it's true, right? Since summer, said the thought was, well, earnings will do it. Well, we got the earnings. It didn't do it. And then it was, well, the election will do it. Well, no. And then the third was, well, buybacks, they'll do it. No. And then it's like year-end rally. That's like a word salad, a great phrase you use. Yeah. That's not a thesis, not a premise.
Word salad.
It's nothing. It's just like maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. Here's the real risk. January is very rarely benign. January this year, we were up huge. January last year, we were up huge. January 16, we were down huge. Are we going to come in and have a quiet January, or could it be something extraordinary?
Well, Q1 2016 was a disaster. And frankly, we had a Fed meeting in December where the Fed went. Everyone knew they were going to go, and we reacted like we didn't know that. I think 2019, Q1 is very similar setup, and because we were questioning global growth. Remember what the commodities were doing. And look at the dollar, by the way, at fresh 18 months highs. The dollar is going to go higher if European politics continue to deteriorate, and that will be devastating for risk assets.
And that could be also something that companies warn about on the conference yes. calls come Q1. We started hearing about that the last earnings call.
It's interesting, though. You know, Tim mentions the first quarter of 16, February, I think it was February 8th, 2016, give or take. That's when the S&P traded down to 18.10. But remember what was going on. China devalued the yuan in August the year before, right? You had banks trading horribly. That was the day that Jamie Dimon announced he was personally buying back stock. Crude oil reversed on that day on some OPEC news. But you have the same type of events going on now. So maybe we will see a repeat of
16. Yeah, I just want to make one other point. What was also happening then, yields were going down, too. Mm-hmm. And that was actually not a positive thing at the point. And that's one of the things I think is really interesting about this Fed setup next week, that a dovish hike may be for the wrong reasons. And it may be the sort of thing that doesn't set 2019, at least equities, up for a rip-roaring year because rates are going to be lower.
All right. So in terms of the break of 2600, how important is that, Carter?
I mean, one of the things about a level that has a lot of authority is that the more authority it has, the more authoritative the resolution. You hover, and ultimately, if you break dramatically. Same thing with breakouts. We know that a stock at well-defined tops, the further and further it toys with that, the more tension there is to break out. So everyone's watching it, chartist, non-chartist. A break has major implications.
All right. Well, with stocks sitting in negative territory for the year and only 10 trading days left in 2018, it's not looking good. Take a look at the market tails from the crypt. The S&P 500 has only been negative 3 out of the past 15 years. But our next guest says not all hope is lost. A 10% rally is still on the table before year end. Let's bring in Fundstrat's Tom Lee. Tom, you're really bullish.
But now sitting next to Carter, it's
warming
down.
Shake hands, guys. Hug it out. Right.
Yeah. So in what form will this 10% rally look like? What sectors will take us there?
Well, it's, obviously we're working with a really short time frame.
Yes.
But we know that markets have been moving very quickly in the last couple of months, right? In 5 days, we've lost 200 points. I think, to me, anything that happens between now and year end is a lot more about positioning than macro developments. You know, like AAII sentiment, bulls minus bears, it's the worst since February 12th, 2016, like days before the market bottomed. And from all of our conversations with clients, our clients aren't worried about a bull rally and missing out a bull rally. They're worried about how much of a drawdown they're facing. So we think most of our clients have gone neutral or even into cash. I think that they've made a determination this is late cycle. So I think that there's a bullish scenario, which is everyone's off sides. And if there's any positive elements, Dan, you mentioned a couple. I think these are catalysts, and 10 days could, you know, see a significant reversal.
So is it going to be the tech sector? Is it going to be financials? I mean, what sorts of, what's the quality of that 10% rally?
This is going to be tougher, but I think the market's is gravitating towards quality names. So it's more like Walt Disney over Netflix. You know, so more Cisco over FANG. And I think maybe that's how people want to be positioned anyways, but I think that's the stuff they're willing to sort of buy up.
I'm curious, Tom, all your life, have you been called an optimist by nature? Because you're sounding, I mean, with given the short time frame for the for your S&P 500 call, and you're also standing pat in terms of Bitcoin, saying the market's got it wrong on Bitcoin. Bitcoin should actually be valued higher, and the markets, there's a disconnect there. I mean, you're really sticking by your guns here.
Well, we're contrarian at the extremes. And actually, as markets make more extreme moves, we tend to look more contrarian. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think 2019 is a great year for equities, but do I think people should be bearish and we should be talking about, you know, a recession? I think it's too early to make that judgment, and I see positioning, so that makes us bullish. On crypto, again, I think the story there is just about adoption on wallets, and that's grown this year. And to us, that's determined fair value for the last 8 years. You know, 93% of the move in Bitcoin has just been explained by active addresses and activity per user. This is the only year where they've really diverged. So I'm not saying the market's wrong. I'm just saying the thing that has driven and explained crypto for the last 8 years hasn't explained the market this year.
Okay. Here's another contrarian call. General Electric.
Yes.
So bad it's good.
Yes, we actually just published a piece, so we looked at 120 years of price history for GE. It's back, its ratio to the Dow is back to 1920. And a lot of bad news has been priced in, and I think one of the most significant developments this week, is actually Steve Tusa's upgrade, not because he's moved the market, but it's just evidence that a lot of bad news is priced in. And it's like the least institutionally owned. Its price to sales is now a 75% discount to the S&P. It's the least like among the industrials. So to us, the risk reward is there. But it's an ugly chart. Our RTA, Rob Slimer, says he doesn't see any evidence. And then Carter's going to get me more depressed.
No. It is an ugly chart. But let's hold that aside. At the lows in 09, there was a large contingent of players who believed that GE was a zero, right? That it was upside down in terms of its leverage and that if not for the bailout, it would have been a zero. Is it any better now? I'm asking because I don't know. I don't do that for a living. But what is the situation?
So there's a lot written. In fact, the Journal had an article today about GE. You know, number one, the CDS is like 240 wide now. When GE was last at $7, it was 1,000 wide. So it's credit saying, hey, I'm a little more comfortable. There's a lot of estimates that some of their flagship businesses, like their turbines, are worth $90 billion. The stock's at $56 billion. So in a way, and they had change agents, right? New management. So maybe little things have to go right, and then good things happen with GE.
Hope you're right, Tom, in terms of the markets. Happy holidays to you. Tom has been really enjoying the holiday. He's been in full holiday spirits of late.
Holiday cheer.
Yes, see, there he has the...
Oh, look at him.
Wait, is that a Photoshop?
No, that's real, right, Tom?
Come on.
It's real.
That's real.
Wow, you've got some moves.
He's got really good form.
Nice
his
pins.
Toe is pointed. I mean, he's really... excellent. This is an excellent photo.
He looks
disturbing.
Good.
Tom, thank
you.
It's not excellent.
Tom,
I mean, that's one word.
A fun strat. I think it's excellent.
No, you don't, Mel. I see the look.
You see the setup for a 10% snapback.
I think the most important thing is it's not what happens between now and the end of the year. It really is the setup. Like last year, we were ripping after those tax cuts in the end of December into the new year, and it kept on going. And what did it do? It set up for a 12% straight line down. Mm-hmm. So we escalated up, elevated down. That's what makes me nervous about any shenanigans late year, and it's not something that I would want to kind of get really involved in one way or another. Okay.
All right, coming up, healthcare getting crushed as a report about Johnson & Johnson weighs on the stock and the entire sector. But the chart master here says don't count the group out yet. That is next. Plus, it wasn't all bad this week. Check out shares of Facebook up 5%. Is the stock finally ready to rally? We've got the details. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system up to a 313-mile range and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out Johnson & Johnson shares tanking today following reports the company was aware of asbestos in its baby powder products for decades. The stock falling 10%, its worst day since 2002. The move taking down the whole healthcare sector by more than 3%, making it the worst performing sector in today's sell-off. So what'd you make of the action, J&J? On the headline, Tim.
Well, the headline, you know, I'll let the company defend itself. I think if you look at the performance of the stock and the fact that it then leaned into United Healthcare and some other stalwarts, very disturbing, right? We're losing leadership by the day. So it's Apple. Johnson & Johnson was basically near the highs. In the last couple of days, you had United Healthcare sell off 7 or 8%. This is not a headline that is based upon a cyclical nature of the economy. In fact, let me give Dan Nathan a word that he likes to use. An idiosyncratic moment, which might not be idiosyncratic, correct?
Right.
I mean, this is your argument.
I'm actually patting you on the back.
But a rare occasion.
Let's not touch. But here's the thing. I think it's important that you remember this is a glass half full to glass half empty. That's what happens. When you're in a bull market, you poo-poo things, right? But then when you're in a bear market, you shoot first and ask questions later. And that's what's going on right now.
So Dan is looking at a chart. I happen to be looking at the same chart of Johnson & Johnson, this time last year it topped out around 150. A couple weeks ago, the stock was trading 150. You have, and Carter's looking at it now, and he will attest, you have a major double top now. Does it do the whole all the way back to where it was in the summer? down to 120, given this headline and given the fact that J.P. Morgan said, although it's an overreaction, the overhang will be here for a while, there's a very good chance it does absolutely print 120 over the next few weeks.
Well, despite the damage done by Johnson & Johnson, healthcare is still the best performing sector this year. But as the market has turned, the typically defensive group has been under the weather, down more than 7% this month. Two-thirds of the sector are in correction territory or worse. The sector is on track for the worst quarter since first quarter of 2016. Carter, though, says today's sell-off is a buying opportunity. So, Carter, why don't you head over to the plasma and tell us why.
Sure. And what's interesting, on a two-quarter basis, it's the best relative performance since 2011 low in the S&P, which is the defensive prospects or characteristics of this sector will almost mathematically provide the safe haven that one would expect. So the news notwithstanding, relative to S&P, this is definitely a place that I would want to be long, and I would make that argument to you. So here's the XLV, no annotations, judgments, anything by me. Let's put in some lines. What we know, generally speaking, is that the healthcare sector has maintained its uptrend. And even with this current sell-off, we've basically come down to a level where I'm going to make the bet that this holds. But again, even if it doesn't and everything goes down, this more likely than not will offer a safe harbor relative performance. Now, this is the key. Same chart on top, same trend line, and it's all about opportunity cost. When this sector sells off during the October swoon, what does it do? It goes straight up relative to other equities. When it sells off again right here, what does it do? It goes straight up relative to other equities. And then one more time, when it sells off just here, what does it do? It outperforms, and that's what alpha is all about. It's defensive, it's got elements, and the J&J thing, as bad as it is, it's such a big weighting in the sector that it hurt the sector. Here's another way to look at it. This is a longer-term chart. What we know is the sector, which languished for a long time, only recently broke out. In fact, not only was it languishing, it was underperforming the market. So put the lines in on the bottom and take a look. So that's your relative performance. During a bull phase, during a sideways period for the sector, you have underperformance, of course, to the ascending market. But the fact that we've broken above that downtrend on a relative basis is very, very constructive. I like healthcare here as a relative trade of the market. If the market's going to go down, healthcare is going to go down, you've got a better bet here than most anywhere else, maybe utilities being the exception.
All right, Carter, why don't you come on over? It's not exactly inviting back, but I mean, he is here.
Like an empty chair at a table at dinner.
I know.
Bad luck.
Weird.
You know what? It's happened.
Johnson & Johnson is about 11% or so of the XLV. If it does have another, I don't know, let's say 10%, I mean, can the XLV go higher without it?
Or can it still outperform? But let's just say this. Most importantly, what to do with J&J? It's a wide holding in many, many accounts. There is an old saying, first loss, best loss. For everyone that did sell today, there are other people who are going to talk about it over the weekend, their committees meeting, their boards, saying maybe we've got to do something. So if you do see usually hit like this, it's better to take some measures and then go from there.
Can I say something? That's like the fifth one tonight.
He's not saving anything.
My favorite. I think we should have a list.
He is Mr. Adage.
Word salad is my favorite.
Word salad.
Because sometimes I feel like it's word smorgasbord
but
on the show.
What was that one?
It's like a cornucopia of charts or something like that, maybe. Yeah.
Smorgasbord. Fantastic.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I was going to throw Friends of the Friendless out. Remember that? The I Love Lucy episode.
No.
You don't remember that.
I saw that as first one.
Sorry. Yeah, I did see it in the first run, wise guy.
Back to healthcare. Back to healthcare. If forced to choose a defensive sector, Tim.
Look, I think healthcare earnings are more defendable in this environment, even with the cyclical headwinds for the economy. Remember, the healthcare sector was the place to hide out, actually, when we were getting this growth scare in 2016. So I would just point out, though, this market has held in, and I mean the healthcare sector, way too long relative to the rest of the market, and it can't defy gravity.
Well, but no, it was underperforming for the past 3 years. It's only just started coming to life. right? I mean, it underperformed.
Well, I look, okay, but I would approach this from J&J trading at roughly 27 times, 28 times earnings. Not terribly cheap. Maybe they're not considered healthcare. Maybe you look at a UNH, also not terribly cheap. So what was defensive, because there was earnings to back it up. And, you know, granted, your chart points out that at a time when other stuff was ripping, these things were underperforming because, in fact, they're more conservative.
Okay. For more on Johnson & Johnson, healthcare's ugly day, go to CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. Here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Yep, it's been a train wreck for transports this month as the group plows into bear market territory. But there's one trader that thinks there could be a buying opportunity amid the wreckage. Plus, don't look now, but after a rough year, Facebook is soaring this week. Is the worst over for the social media giant? We will explain. Much more Fast Money right after this.
You've got a friend. For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back. Breaking news out of the White House. Let's get to Eamon Javers, who's joining us on the Fast Line. Hey, Eamon.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. The President of the United States has just tweeted out he has selected an acting White House Chief of Staff. It's going to be Mick Mulvaney, who's been the Director of the Office of Management and Budget and also the official in charge of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which has been undergone a name change under his tenure. The White House, though, the President in his tweet saying that he's going to be acting White House Chief of Staff, so leaving open the possibility that he might not be the permanent selection here. He might be simply a placeholder, or it's possible, as all things in the Trump White House, that that plan could change, and he could eventually work his way into having the president drop that acting word from his title. So we'll wait and see where that goes. But Mick Mulvaney is somebody that the president has turned to time and time again when he needs competent staffing in the White House for high-profile jobs, and is somebody who's a former member of Congress, so will have experience dealing with Capitol Hill and intimate experience dealing with Republican leaders on Capitol Hill, knows them all very, very well, and now will be the acting chief of staff at the White House.
The president has gotten a lot of no's, it seems, at least reportedly, Eamon. I mean, Nick Ayers turned it down because he wanted to spend more time with his family. Chris Christie reportedly turned it down, saying now is not the right time. Should we read anything into that?
Well, I think this is a difficult choice for somebody to come in from the outside. So with a Chris Christie, first of all, there's the strained relationship with Jared Kushner and the Kushner family due to Chris Christie's involvement in prosecution of Kushner's father years ago, and also the fact that Christie had been on the transition team and pushed out. Christie sort of got this on-again, off-again relationship with the president, which seems like it's now off again as of today. That might have been a tougher sell to come in and run this staff from the outside. Nick Ayers was somebody the president wanted. He's a 36 or maybe now 37-year-old insider in this White House who has been the chief of staff to the vice president and was, by all accounts, the president's first choice for this job. But he decided for his own reasons that he wanted to move back to Georgia for family reasons and otherwise, and did not want to take this chief of staff job. It will be a very tough job for whoever takes it.
All right, Eamon, thank you so much for phoning in. We appreciate it. Eamon Jabbers at the White House. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Carter Braxton Worth, what do you say?
Final trade, Tom Lee's Disney. Axwell Long.
Tim.
Yum. The one not in China, by the way, has been very, very defensive. Stay with that brand.
Dan.
Yeah, FedEx. Stay tuned on OA. We're going to do a contrarian play there.
Guy.
We have amazing pages come through, don't we?
We do.
And Stephanie Larritt, who's over there, if you put the camera on her, she's leaving us. It's her last. It went by like
very sad.
That.
I know.
But she's moving on to Bravo, I believe. That's her next assignment. And then I'm sure she'll wind up being our collective bosses at some time.
Bravo.
Congratulations, Stephanie.
Good luck,
and for
Stephanie.
My final trade there, Mel.
Yes.
I think the retailers might actually bounce. I'm not in the 10% camp, but I think Macy's might actually get you done.
All right, that does it for us here on Fast. We'll see you back here Friday.
Oh,
Monday at 5.
Puppy.
Options action starts right after this break.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.